listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Happy Wednesday. This week has been incredibly busy for me. A lot of weeks are busy, which is why those weeks, you could tell those weeks because generally we only have one episode that week, that particular week, and this is going to be one of those weeks. But because this week my daughter's graduating college. Kelvy's graduating with a bachelor's in social work or BA or a BS, I can't remember exactly which, from Hannibal LaGrange University down in Hannibal, Missouri. So we're going to be traveling down there. I'm excited for her and what God might have in store for her upon graduation. She's got, you know, several opportunities she's looking at. So that's exciting. I'm turning my attention back to Iowa legislative races because the June 5th primary is quickly approaching, and I want to get as many candidates on this podcast as possible. Focusing this week on Iowa House District 26, which is down in Warren County, the Republican Party has a contested primary between Jeff Jansen and Rebel Snodgrass. Rebel was the 2016 Republican nominee. He lost the general election in 2016 to State Representative Scott Orth, who was an incumbent. So he's hoping to get the nomination to challenge him again. I've reached out to both men. I've had a chance to talk to Rebel first. I had a conversation with him this afternoon. But before we get to that conversation, first a word from our sponsors.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a life insurance plan that makes sense for you, call my friend Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. That's Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
And I'm back. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Rebel Snodgrass, one of the Republican candidates in Iowa House District 26. Well, hey, Rebel, thank you so much for taking time to talk to our listeners about your candidacy in Iowa House District 26. The question I always ask every candidate I interview, what made you decide to run?
I tell you what, Shane, I originally decided to run back in 2016. Mm-hmm. I was sporting some campaign gear at a gun show, and a gentleman that was filling in at a booth there got to talking to me and found out I was from this area, and there was no conservative that was going to challenge the incumbent. And so he asked me, and I felt like I just was back in seventh grade and just got caught smoking again.
Okay.
My stomach got butterflies in it, and the hair stood on the back of my neck, and I was just like, it scared the death out of me. And I said, no way. And
so in seventh grade, you're saying you lived up to your first name? You're a rebel?
Yeah, well, I got expelled the very first day of school because the big kid said that was what you do. And I followed the big kids, and that wasn't what you do.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
That's all right. But I tell you, when I got suspended, I knew I had to go home and tell my father. That was a scary moment.
I bet.
And that's exactly how I felt when they asked me to run. And I'll tell you, it, as luck would have it, my best friend and my right arm here at my business was on his honeymoon in Hawaii, so I couldn't call and talk to him. The only thing my wife would say is, you know how I feel about it. I don't want you to do it, but if you do it, I'll support you. And my dad was gone, and so literally I spent a lot of time sitting on the deck, and this was in March, sitting on the deck outside at night praying, looking at the skies going, why me? Why are they asking me to do this?
Right.
And for 5 days I fretted over this, and it came down to I can do it. I'm in a position in my life to where, you know, it is actually set up around the farm schedule, which happens to be my downtime in my business.
Okay.
And I'm in a position in my life where I could. And I wanted to serve. One of the only regrets I have in my life is that I did not serve in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, this is a way that I could. So I ran in 2016. We didn't quite get it done. And the people of Warren County came to me and they said, we would like you to run again.
Okay.
I said, it's a little too soon to consider that, honestly, because I'm telling you, if you want to talk about building character, put 100% of yourself out there. Be the first person to say I love you in a relationship here, because that's what I did.
Right.
I went out there and I campaigned. I knocked on over 10,000 doors, and I got to know the community so well, I already owned them as a constituency. I wanted to work for them. And so when it came down that I didn't make it and we had a room full of hundreds of people and I had to go out and tell them, you know, guys, I appreciate how hard you work, but we didn't quite get it done.
Right.
And people started to cry. There was people that really cried. It was extremely hard. And so when they asked me to run again, I really, really had to contemplate it. And after some prayers and a lot of contemplation, I decided to go ahead and do that. So they also asked me to run and to actually they asked me to run for the chair of the Warren County Central Committee for the Republicans, and I did, and I've been running it ever since. I figured that would be good practice because I'm just a country boy. I grew up in southern Indiana.
Uh-huh.
I moved out here 30 years ago.
Okay.
And
I was wondering about your accent because that doesn't sound Iowan.
You know, I was raised in southern Indiana, and I was raised an educated people.
Mm-hmm.
Those people in Tennessee and Kentucky were called hillbillies.
Uh-huh.
I had to move to Iowa to find out them folks lied to me.
My wife grew up in Indiana, and you know, and she but Northwest Indiana, but you know, I've known several people from southern Indiana. It's like people don't really realize that's south. You know?
Yeah, it really is. It's Indiana's a long, slender state, so they think of you being straight across. But like you said, everything from the Great Lakes all the way down.
Yep. All right. Well, I just wanted to ask you some policy questions. First off, the legislature just passed a fetal heartbeat abortion ban last night. Actually, this morning, the Iowa Senate passed the House version. Which bans abortion bans abortions of babies that where a heartbeat has been detected, with the exception, and the House version added exceptions to it. I mean, the original version already had life of the mother, which is kind of a standard accepted exception, I guess, among the pro-life community, but also include this new version that just passed. It's going to be going to Governor Reynolds' desk. Includes exceptions for rape, incest, fetal abnormalities, which generally these are exceptions that a lot of pro-lifers don't accept, but I think a lot of people held their nose because they felt like it was, you know, better than the alternative. How would you approach that bill if you were in the Iowa House?
I would have voted for either version of that bill.
Okay.
I would have stepped up and proudly voted for the version that they passed,
mm-hmm.
and I would have voted for it prior, as
okay.
well without those exceptions. I am pro-life from conception to natural death.
So you'd support a personhood bill as well?
I would.
Okay.
I absolutely would. I am actually, I believe that I'm on register as that because they called and asked me.
Okay. I haven't checked with person in Iowa, so.
I believe that's the case.
Okay. All right. So, I just also want to ask, should there be criminal penalties? Because right now, the House version, there's never been criminal penalties for moms. That's just not something that most people in the pro-life community want to push. But the Senate version had criminal penalties for abortionists. The House version stripped the criminal penalties out and instead had discipline through the Iowa Board of Medicine. Where do you land on that? What's your thinking on that? Because, I know some people probably think, all right, we're going to pass this, so it's done. We're not going to have to deal with this again. But, you know, folks like me think this is just, you know, you kick the field goal, but the game's
right,
not over,
right.
You know? I mean, this is good, but this is not the end of the game. I don't want this to view this as victory. So what are your thoughts on that?
That's exactly where I'm at. I was really disappointed last year when they passed the 20 weeks, and mm-hmm. I seen people there that were pro-life, and they were being really rude and obnoxious because they didn't feel they went far enough.
Right.
And as you say, I was very happy. I was like, wow, they got that field goal there. What I seen is I seen people out there going, wow, you mean you can do it after 20 weeks? I'm like, this is great. They actually started a conversation. It's a forward movement. It's bringing it into the light.
Right.
I definitely would like to see, I'm always for moving that field goal. Sometimes you don't get to go all the way, but I'm always for moving closer to that goal.
Right. I think we're going to see abortions continually be reduced. Cause I think, that, I know liberals will say it's because we're passing out free birth control. But I think we're the younger generation has just, their attitude towards abortion is changing. I think we're seeing more and more young people, become pro-life, and say, hey, you know, stop killing, you know, my generation basically. And they're standing up for life. And that's one, you know, there's some things about millennials that have disappointed me, but this isn't one thing that has. I mean, they've actually been pretty good on the life issue. And I think we'll see that continue. But I think we're going to it's going to be a comprehensive effort of not just obviously legislation, but also more importantly, we're winning hearts and minds and winning culture. And changing people's minds, that I think it's going to eventually lead to seeing more, you know, fewer and fewer abortions. I think we're all, you know, because we're sinful people and we live in a broken and sinful world, we're probably going to always have, you know, this among us, whether they're pursuing abortions illegally or whether they could still get them legally. But it's good to see the. I guess there's not really a question there. I'm just making a statement, but there's.
Well, you know, we. I tell you something, Shane. This really is something that is close to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I are not able to have kids.
Okay.
And it cost so much.
Yeah.
Through adoption or other avenues to start a family that young families can't do it. And now my wife and I we're fortunate, we're blessed, and you know, it wouldn't be easy, but we could scrounge together and make that happen now. But now we're looking and I'm going, you know, I'm 52.
Right.
Is it even fair to be that old and to bring a child into our lives? You know, how long before they're on their own?
Yeah.
And so, it's a close issue for me, and I know for a fact that there are millions of couples out across America that would love the opportunity to adopt a child and start a family. And I think it needs to be less of a stigma on adoption.
Right.
It needs to be easier for adoption, mm-hmm. less costly. I think we need to attack this through education.
Okay. And you know, are you supportive of things like adoption tax credits?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, because that's one point I know Democrats are making. Great, you want to ban abortion, but how do you support, especially younger girls who may be caught up in an unexpected pregnancy? How do we provide support for those? I don't think the answer is, hey, the government can fix it. But there probably are some things that state government can do to encourage adoption, like adoption tax credits and obviously then we just need to encourage the private sector to be involved and rally around, these girls, through organizations, through mentoring, through, a lot of different avenues that they could provide support. Well, shift gears here, to education. Education, is about 57% of the state makes up at least education funding, both K-12 as well as regents, universities, and community colleges make up about 57% of the state general fund. What is your view of local control of education? What does that mean to you?
I believe that local control, almost everything should be there, like what we were just talking about even. We should be working with our communities to figure out how to make it be controlled at the grassroots, because it literally, I believe this to my core, it starts at the home, it then goes to your church, it then goes to the community for responsibility wise. And so, I believe the control should be at the local level, especially, schools is no exception. The more control at that local level, has more vested interest in your child having a good education than you.
Right.
And so if that control is where you as a parent can go to the meetings and hold their feet to the fire, if you will, mm-hmm. to be doing the right thing, you're going to have a better level of education. And your dollars are going to be being spent a lot wiser.
Right. Should the Iowa Department of Education continue to chase after federal education grants? Because obviously with grants, pardon?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I don't. And I tell you what, after this interview, maybe not, but I currently do all of Simpson College's doors and windows and siding and stuff like that on their campus. And okay. It's usually scheduled around their grants.
Oh, well, and I mean, what Simpson does is a private university. That's totally up to them. But I'm, obviously they're with Iowa Department of Education. I mean, you got Title I funding, and I don't think that's going to ever necessarily go away. I mean, maybe one day it will. It'd be nice to see feds, what I'd love to see is the Federal Department of Education close and maybe they just block grant money to the states for education, let them decide what to do with it. But that's a long road to hoe, and hopefully right. we see that done. But, states are kind of their own worst enemy, too. When they say they want total control of education, but yet they're constantly going to the federal government with their hands out. So be nice to see
Iowa core.
Yeah. Less and less. Yeah, exactly. Well, because of the Race to the Top grant, Iowa, joined Smarter Balance Consortia, assessment consortia, they adopted the Common Core State Standards and aligned our math and English language arts standards to the Common Core, out of the promise that would make them eligible to actually be competitive for this grant that we didn't actually end up getting. I like calling Race to the Top Race to the Trough, because in 2009 when this came out, I mean, the states were cash poor. They were in the middle of the recession. They were struggling, so everybody was trying to, gobble up any kind of federal money that was out there. It'd be great if the Iowa Department of Education would, ease off of applying for these federal grants because they never, you know, money's never free.
No, no, it's not.
Right. So,
I got the visual image of it's a wild, wild world.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So
full of people running at the end, trying to climb over each other to get the money.
Yeah. Should Iowa repeal the Common Core state standards out of their standards and next generation science standards and return?
I would absolutely support that.
Okay. All right. So, school choice, where do you land on that? Are you a supporter of education savings accounts or vouchers or tax credits? I mean, where do you land?
I believe, well, first off, like I mentioned, my wife and I can't have kids, so we don't have kids.
Right.
But I don't think that should alleviate me from paying my share of taxes.
I
proudly pay my taxes that I know is going to the school to help our community, and I'm 100% behind that. However, my operations manager, his kids are going to a Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that he should be getting tax credit to offset. He shouldn't have to be paying taxes for a school system that's not working well enough for him, so he's going to a better school.
So he didn't have to pay double, basically.
Exactly. He's having to pay double, and that's not fair.
Yeah. Okay. So the Iowa legislature is going to be exploring tax reform. They say, anyway, we're still waiting to see the bill that's being introduced. That was a compromise between the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate and Governor Reynolds. Where do you land on tax reform? How should Iowa approach tax reform and tax relief? Folks on the left are saying we can't afford it. How would you respond to that?
Well, folks on the left really, really like to spend money.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I'm a businessman, and I understand the principles of finance. We can afford it. We're overspending, and that's an issue. But here's what you got to think about. If you want to grow the state, both in people and in businesses, you're going to have to be competitive on your tax structure. And right now, prior to this getting signed into law, we have a 12% tax on corporates. That is the highest tax rate on a business in any state in the nation.
Right.
Right here, Iowa, the most expensive state to do business in. Why do you think that we don't see a lot of manufacturing? And I drive all over the state of Iowa for my business, and I go in and out of all these little towns, and I think, this town could really use a manufacturing plant.
Right.
As I'm looking at roofs that are patched in and siding that needs replaced. And, you know, you go into Newton and there's beautiful homes that have been so well maintained over the years. And now you're looking at them and a lot of the homes are starting to look rough. And it's because so much of the manufacturing is gone.
Right.
From Newton. And so that structure has to go down. I believe the compromise they settled on was a little below 10%. But that isn't enough.
For corporate, yeah. Further. Yeah.
Yeah, for corporate. Mm-hmm. For corporate. Now, for individual taxes, on the individual, we still are way too high. The taxes on the individual is, out of 14 states in the Midwest, we are the second highest in those 14 Midwestern states. And so, there again, if you want to see people here, you've got to have the jobs and you have to have a good tax rate. And so I think they dropped that to 6.5%.
Something for the top rate, yeah. I believe so. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's
right.
Like in 2021, I think that's when we're going to land at that top rate. I'm still not entirely sure how that's going to work. It'd be nice to see legislation rather than just the talking points. Right.
Yeah, that's myself. And you know, that literally, it's so new that like you said, I haven't been able to read the entire bill myself to see exactly where they did settle at. And it isn't a simple issue. It is complex.
Right.
But
they're changing.
What is simple is.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well,
what is simple.
You first. I'll well, shut up.
Okay. What is simple is the second highest individual tax rate out of the entire Midwest and the highest corporate rate in the entire United States. It's pretty simple to understand you're paying too much taxes and that we need to get that down.
Right. Okay, what I was going to ask is one of the things in the compromise is addressing internet sales tax. Should out of state companies be assessed Iowa sales tax?
I am never for adding new taxes.
Okay.
I'm not. I know we're seeing a change in commerce, and there's more and more over the internet. So therefore, the question begs is, well, are we really increasing taxes, or are we just gaining back tax revenue lost through the block and mortar stores?
Right. Yeah. And I understand the brick and mortar stores' perspective on internet sales tax, but on the other hand, it's like ultimately, who you're hurting is consumers. So,
exactly. And I don't even know who said this, the government can't give you anything it doesn't take first.
Right. So,
and I have never seen the government spend money wiser than I spend my own dollar.
Right, that's true. I had somebody say, oh, they, it's just a few dollars. They could just keep their money so we can, fully fund K-12 education and yada, this and that. And it's like, man, I could decide how to spend that money far better than the state of Iowa can. Speaking of which, kind of shifting gears a little again, one of the common complaints is we can't afford this tax reform package. We can't afford tax relief. But yet tax revenue, even though the revenue estimating conference has been off in their projections, tax revenue keeps increasing, but our spending is increasing at a faster rate. So, my contention is we have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. If you're elected, how would you address the spending problem?
Well, that's actually probably the toughest question you've asked me.
There's no magic bullet. I know there's no silver bullet approach.
I'm good. I'm wanting to tap out on this one. I don't. One of the things is that anybody that knows me knows that I'm not a politician.
Right.
And I just tell you what it is, and I really can't give you a good answer to that. I can tell you that I will bring with me my conservative values and I am a very good at business.
Okay.
And so I will bring that with me and I will do the hard work. I will put the time in and learn where the money is all going.
Okay.
And work at fixing that. But I believe so much of it is because of ongoing obligations.
Well,
that
definitely
have been put in place.
Yeah, I mean, you have the Medicaid issue because that's always going to be something that seems to be growing. And I know they tried to reform that through privatization, and I'm not sure that's going the way they want it. I think there's some issues with that as well. Obviously, as our student enrollment grows in the state of Iowa, education funding will, have to grow. So just by a nature of just our population growing, there will definitely be growth in the budget. I don't think you can necessarily stop that.
But it's a balance of growing as the population grows, so does the tax base.
Right, absolutely. And I guess, the question being is like with education, people are saying fully fund K-12. We need more. We need more. We need more. And I never hear how much more is either. And I know that's a complicated answer because, school districts are different and their county tax base, their actual property tax base differs by school district as well, which plays into that. you know, so what does that look like? How should that be reformed? Then, of course, we got the state also has a huge obligation for the property tax backfill for counties and municipalities. You know, is that something that should continue for local governments that saw their property tax rebound after the property tax reform? Like, is that something that we should continue for West Des Moines? So your answer, you said no?
Yeah, I don't believe so.
Okay.
I think that, you know, that was meant more as a stopgap.
Right, right. And now it seems like it's just an ongoing obligation.
Right, right. You know, and that's and that goes along with like a lot of the budgets that are set up to use it or lose it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we should be incentivizing. We should literally treat each branch as its own entity and incentivize them to be frugal and do a good job instead of going, well, you know, we haven't had hardly any snow this year, so we might as well send everybody out on overtime and spray the roads with salt and with a saline solution and run up and down the roads.
Yeah.
Use that up because next year we may need it and I don't want to not have it.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a horrible, it's the awful mentality. Yeah, definitely.
It is.
It's
something that everybody out here gets. I don't care. Like I said, I knocked on over 10,000 doors and I talk to Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and very few people don't get that concept.
Yeah.
But yet you get into government and it's like all of a sudden it's not that big of an issue. There's always money there. We'll just get more.
Right.
Money is hard to get and easy to get rid of.
Yeah. Yeah. Shifting gears, and I want to kind of bring this to a close because we're way over the promised time I gave you. one thing we're seeing in states like California, for instance, sexual orientation and gender identity laws are starting to encroach on religious freedom of Christians as well as potentially other people, but there are other religious liberty issues at play for other folks. Anytime the state encroaches on religious freedom, which we're seeing more and more and more of, how should Iowa protect religious freedom, but yet also make sure that people are legitimately not being discriminated against?
Personally, I think as a community, we need to push back. We need to push back hard. Every time I run into a pastor or a minister, a preacher, I'm talking to them. I become the minister, and I'm ministering to them now, telling them that they need to be bold and they need to stand up.
Right.
There are already discrimination laws on the books to handle that.
Right. So, for instance, if a Christian baker's, asked to, it's not, do you believe it's discrimination if they turn down
absolutely
a same-sex?
Not.
Okay. Because that's one thing that frustrates me is that people don't seem to understand the difference between saying, I don't want to participate in this event compared to, I'm not going to allow you to be a customer. Because, for instance, Gort's House, they had same-sex, or they had homosexual customers. They just didn't want to participate in a same-sex wedding. And
right.
You know, there's a freedom of association, there's a freedom of conscience issues, it's a religious liberty issue, and nobody seems to understand that. Then, of course, anytime you talk about having a bill to protect, like Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which doesn't, all that does is provide a potential legal defense for somebody who's accused and a complaint is made against them to use in court, that doesn't necessarily predetermine the outcome of that, you know, that issue in court. People, we see not just the left go ballistic, but also corporate America go ballistic. We saw this in Georgia. We saw this in Indiana. And I'm thinking probably Facebook, Apple, Microsoft coming to Iowa also helped shoot a potential Religious Freedom Restoration Act here in Iowa, kept it grounded. which is amazing to me because we probably, and it was grounded in the Senate, which is probably, our Senate is probably the most conservative it's been in years. But yeah, we couldn't get that done this session. How do you think we address that, you know, legislatively?
Well, I would tell you I'm in support of religious freedoms.
Okay.
I'm not sure how to address that myself, Shane. That's the second thing you've asked me that I haven't been able to.
Well, would you support a Religious Freedom Restoration Act?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, there's a start.
Listen, whether you're a Christian or not, you cannot argue the facts. Christian values are good for society. I mean, who can argue not coveting the neighbor's wife? Do
right.
not kill. I mean, seriously.
Right.
You know, thou shalt not steal. How can you argue that is a bad value? You know?
Yeah.
And so whether you're a Christian, I was the day after the election last year, there was a man that worked very hard in my campaign, and he went with me. He made me get out of bed. I didn't even want to get out of bed. You know, it was terrible. Of course, one thing was I was up until 3 o'clock in the morning to watch Trump win. But I took I'm driving around picking up all these signs, and I'm thinking, who in the right mind put out 115 four-page signs?
Right.
But we're driving around picking them up, and he asked me how I felt. And I said, you know, I'll tell you something. I figure the Lord's will was done.
Right.
So I'll deal with it no matter how I feel right now.
Right.
And he looked at me and he says, you know, I'm an atheist, right? And I said, well, that makes you my favorite atheist then, because, you know, I love you. He's a good friend. He was a good and I like him as a person, and I hope I rub off on him. But you don't have to be a Christian to appreciate Christian values.
True. Very true. Last
and
question,
because
so
I believe that is our right. We are, without a doubt, in my mind, we are a Christian nation. We were founded on Christian values, and I won't deny that.
Okay. The last question, because we're like way over time. I want to make sure, you know, I want to get you off. I'm sure you got other things you need to do.
Right.
You're running contested primary, and if you should you be nominated? You know, you're running up against the guy that's defeated you back in 2016, Representative Scott Orth. Why should the voters of Iowa House District 26 vote for you again?
Well, my stance has not changed since the time I said I would run in 2016. His has gotten clearer, but his has not changed either. The reason that I was so against Scott Orth to begin with is because I seen him speak one time, and I had been following how he voted, and I went, what? That's not how he votes. He's talking, he literally balled his fist up, and he was talking about balancing the budget, and then he goes in there and he votes. In 4 years' time, he voted for $2.2 billion worth of increased expenditures. That's a $704 for every man, woman, and child tax in
yeah.
the state of Iowa. But yet he's telling people he's frugal. And so I'm watching how he votes versus how he talks. And I reached out to him a couple times about that. And that's, like I said, that's kind of how this whole thing come about, is I was paying attention. So when they asked me to run against him, I knew what was there. I am the same conservative. The first thing I did was I got online and I printed off the Constitution for the state of Iowa. Now, a lot of people laughed at me about that, but I believe in that guiding document.
Yeah.
And so I printed it off so I could study it, because I won't cross that. I won't cross our founding fathers and the law of the land. You take an oath when you go in there, and I will follow that exact oath. I'm that guy that I said I was then. I'm still that guy. Now, his positions have gotten clearer because he has voted even more.
Right.
For instance, the first thing off of my mind is he voted against the right for you as an Iowan to keep and bear arms to be added to our Constitution. We are one of six states. 44 states in the nation have that right in their in the state constitution. And people say, well, why do we need it? It's in the Second Amendment's in the federal constitution. Well, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but the state of Texas in 2015, the governor actually marshaled the National Guard to follow the federal troops that was in his state because he didn't trust the government. The federal government was acting so erratic. I believe we need it in our state government because that is our insurance. That's our protection.
Right. Well, hey, where can people learn more about your candidacy?
You can see me at rebelforiowa.com, and I also have a Facebook, Rebel for Iowa. On there's my phone number, and I'm an open book. You can call me, and, you know, I don't have time a lot, but I absolutely will always make the time. So if you catch me in a busy time, then we'll set something up. I recommend going through Facebook and just taking a reaching out to me through Facebook and saying, hey, I'd like to meet up with you, and I'll buy you the best cup of coffee in the state.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it too, Shane.
Hey, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Again, that's caffeinatedthoughts.com. Or you can just Google Caffeinated Thoughts and we'll show up at the top of your search screen. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You can find those on Facebook and Twitter at Caff Thoughts, C-A-F-F, then Thoughts. We'd love to have you follow us. Also, you can sign up for our emails on the website, caffeinatedthoughts.com. That way, you never miss a single update. Hey, this is Shane Vanderhart, and until next time, my friends, take care.